Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. Super excited to have this conversation today with nutritional expert Carly Pollack. She wrote a book that I read from cover to cover. I don't always have time to do that in my radio life. And this one really caught me. It really spoke to me. So, you know, like, there's so many diets and cleanses. There's keto, there's paleo, there's vegan. I've tried every single one of them. And I gain some, I lose some, and I can't seem to get off that, you know, hamster wheel of the diet and all those challenges that we do, Whole30 and all that kind of stuff. And I'm really like at this point in my life where I just want somebody to tell me, please just tell me how to eat because it's driving me nuts. And this book that Carly wrote called Feed Your Soul has really also is a person who's lived that same vicious cycle over and over again. And God bless her for writing this book, really studying how nutrition works and what she's done with it that's so different is really linked it to our mindset. How we think, how we feel, the attitude we have about it is really where this change needs to happen. So we need to sort of feed our soul in order to figure out how to eat. So Carly, thank you for writing this book.
Thank you so much for reading it.
It was amazing. Really was. And I'm serious. Like, I am one of those people that's been on every, things were fine for me until I hit menopause. And that at that point it was, here's your 20 pounds, you know? And I've tried everything, every diet, every fad, everything that's come out. And it's a bit frustrating because, you know, you try something, kind of works for a little while and then it doesn't. And then right when you're going to give up, somebody gives me a new book about a new thing that I got to try. I just feel like I'm going crazy with all of this. Is that something you hear a lot?
Only 20, maybe 30 times a day. Not really that much, you know. I dedicate an entire chapter in the book to talking about what, you know, going beyond the diet dogma, which really means to me figuring out what is the medicine for you individually, and not only for you, but for you at this moment in your life, because it changes. Like you said, you know, you'll try something and then it will work for a little while and then it won't work. I can't tell you how many times I've done something or clients have done a diet and 10 years later they try it again or even that next year and they're so perplexed because the first time they did it, it worked and they don't quite grasp the idea that your body is this ever evolving, you know, being, and your hormones are constantly changing and that keto can work at one point and be poison for another person. I mean, I just told a client today, we were talking and I took her off the keto diet and there's nothing wrong with the keto diet. I'm not anti-keto. I'm not anti-paleo. I'm not anti-vegan. There's few diets that I'm anti if they have a logical, sane base to them. It's really about finding what works for you. And then once you find what works for you, doing the real work, which is the mind work, like you mentioned, to make sure that you wake up with an authentic desire day after day to create that consistency that we need for permanent change.
Yeah. So there's so much, there's so many parts about your program and your book that I really loved. And tell us a little bit about the inner work. Like, how do we even start doing that?
I share this really simple formula that I use for myself every single day. And the formula is that our thoughts drive how we feel. So our thoughts drive our emotions and our emotions dictate how we behave. Our behavior is going to drive a reward or consequence, which then creates this feedback loop. Either it really solidifies the original thought or sometimes it creates a brand new thought. So for example, if you have a thought I am, you know, you put on your jeans in the morning and they don't fit and you have a thought, this is it. I've got to do something. My fat pants don't fit me. Then you drive an emotional state, which is a motivation to do the right thing, to eat. Let's say you start eating healthier. You start eating more vegetables, less sugar. Then your behavior is that you eat cleaner and your reward is that you drop a couple of pounds. Now, logical thinking around food would think that the reward would drive further home the thought, oh, if I continue to eat this way, I'll continue to lose. But how often have we lost a couple of pounds? And then the new thought is, I can eat this because, you know, it's a reward. I've done so well all week. And we actually we reward ourselves with the very thing that we were avoiding to get the reward so we can reward. You know, it's very, very vicious, that cycle. And so beginning to do the mind work is really starting to identify what are your thoughts, what are your stories, your limiting beliefs that are ultimately driving a food behavior that's not serving you and blocking you from reaching your goals.
Yeah, I liked how you were really honest about sort of short-term desire and long-term desire. And because I think that's something that I certainly know I get caught in. And the short-term desire of that chocolate chip muffin looks really good versus the long-term desire of I want to fit in that dress in a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, it's not just you. We are wired for short-term avoidance of pain and short-term seeking of pleasure. It really is a survival mechanism. I mean, who cared about long-term when you needed to seek food, shelter, water? There was no long-term. There was run from this bear and don't touch the fire. And so our brains weren't really trained to think, oh, how will I feel about this muffin tomorrow morning? Or how I feel about this next time summer comes around and I'm invited to a pool party. We have to retrain the brain, the mind, which is really what this whole book is about. The other day, my father read the book, which is really funny because let's just say an 80-year-old man is not my target audience. But he read the book and he said, oh, I was really surprised. I thought it was going to be a diet book, but it's not really a diet book. It's you know, a mind book. It's a development book. And he's really right. I mean, yes, I talk about food. And yes, after you read this book, you have a much stronger idea on what is the right diet for you. But really, the work is done in your head and not on your plate.
Yeah, I love, there's a couple of things that really stood out for me. I love the five core beliefs that you talk about yes. In the beginning. Like, can you talk about those a little bit? I read that, I was like, wow, that changes
everything. Everything. It changed my life. You know, my belief is that when we're born into this world, we're really, as you see, why people are so attracted to babies is because they're so pure, they're so enlightened, they are so present. There's, you know, we will say they're not tainted yet. They're really just their higher selves all the time. And they say how they feel and they want what they want. And they really show and are an example of the way that we would like to show up and be in the world. And so we have this pure child. And then as they grow up, they learn fear and they learn separateness and they create an ego, as Eckhart Tolle would call it. Mm. And we start to learn these beliefs such as, you know, we are not safe. We can only depend on ourselves. The world is out to get us. Things are unfair. Things don't have any rhyme or reason. And we learn these beliefs and then they manifest for us in our life. And what I realized is that much of my eating was to manage my anxiety. So I was using food like a drug. And anytime I believe you're hungry and you know this because you read the book, we're only hungry for two reasons. We either are physically hungry and require the nourishment, or we're emotionally hungry. And what that means is we're using food to shift an emotion. And so I realized that I was using food to shift an emotion. And if I wanted to heal this permanently, I needed to get to the root of what emotion I was experiencing that was so uncomfortable that I needed to abuse food in that way. And the emotion was anxiety, which is fear, and stress, which is really just a code word for fear. And so I had to look at my beliefs. And I decided that I was going to rewrite my core beliefs, and that if I could wake up and have tools that would help me when I went into fear or stress or control to surrender and come back to a place of feeling grounded and feeling really peaceful, then I wouldn't need to abuse food. And then the focus wouldn't need to be on the 8 millionth diet that I need to try in order to get skinny, in order to feel happy, in order to feel peaceful. It was like, let me start at trying to get happy. And I will say that I am not saying that I just want you to work on your happiness and then you'll automatically start eating healthy. I don't think it's that simple. I am saying that dieting without a spiritual practice is really chaotic, and that you need to do both at the same time. So I do want you to look at the food, and I do want you to create loving boundaries around food based on what your body's language is, which is another thing I teach in the book. But you also need to do the mind work at the same time, or else it just won't work.
Yeah, it's such a complete system. And I can see how, like, you would kind of have to do this sort of mindfulness. You talk about mindful eating, you know, the sort of mindfulness stuff to see what's going, like, if we have to clear out like a bunch of the layers of emotion in a way to even feel what's happening in our body.
Yeah. And some people are thinkers and some people are feelers. So back to that formula of thoughts drive emotions, drive behaviors. For people who are really empathic and they feel a lot, they may not be able to catch themselves at the unconscious story. They may catch themselves in the middle of this formula at the emotion. They may wake up and go, ooh, I'm anxious. Or, oh, I feel really depressed these last few days. And then they can work their way back and saying, well, if I'm feeling this way, it must be driven by a thought. Versus people who are thinkers and are better able to catch, ooh, I just had this negative thought. And an interesting story, I've always struggled from anxiety, which is where I started to abuse food and abuse drugs, but food was my number one love. And I had a coach at the time, and I said to him, you know, some days I wake up and the second I open my eyes, I'm anxious. And he said, well, you know, what do you think is the story behind it? I said, listen, there's no story. When I wake up, I'm anxious. I'm telling you, it just happens right away. And he said, that's BS. There's no way to feel an emotion that isn't being driven by a thought. And it kind of annoyed me. I was like, stop pushing me. He doesn't get it. You know, we start to do that thing. People with anxiety who don't have anxiety don't get us. And it took me a little while to think about it. And I realized, actually, I never wake up on Saturday with anxiety. It's always Monday. When I was starting work or I have some big project due, and that he was right. It was really subconscious. And I probably went to sleep with the story, which is why when I woke up immediately, I felt that way. So, you know, you can use your emotions. And I started to use my anxiety as a touchstone. It was like, instead of as soon as I felt it, feeling cursed by it and going, oh, how am I going to get rid of this? Should I pop a pill? Should I eat something? Should I, you know, smoke weed, what should I do? It was, ooh, this is a blessing because this is telling me that there's something in my thought process that needs to be reorganized in order for me to feel free again and lighthearted and happy. So let me go and do that work. So thank you, anxiety, for showing me that I have work to do. And still to this day, when I feel anxious, which is much, much less than I did before, but I absolutely still do because I'm human, I now have a tool that can help me get out of it much quicker. And I really base my success not on how long do I go without being anxious. I base my success on how quickly can I go from feeling anxious back to a place of feeling grounded, present, and free.
Hmm. Wow. That's so powerful. And I would imagine that everybody has a different feeling, you know, that they're in a different story and a feeling they connect to it. So we have to figure out for ourselves. For you is anxiety. I think for me, it's loneliness, you know,
yes.
That's a big one. For me, I think there's probably some anxiety in there too, but I have a friend who's an angry eater. She gets real mad. She sort of, you know, she goes for it, and you can tell when she's eating, you're like, whoa, you know, that there's
she's
that
like, I'm gonna
there.
Get you fries.
Yeah, that's it. Like, keep your hands and feet away. Like, that is some
energy
there.
She's gonna cut them off. Yeah, but you know, even with the emotion of loneliness, there obviously has to be a story about how alone and isolated you are. And the story about being alone is a very neutral story, just like any other story. I have a big project tomorrow, neutral. I am alone in the house right now, neutral. But the meaning we give to that story is what drives the emotion. So you're saying I'm alone right now and that's not okay. Or I should not be this way, or someone should be here with me. And that meaning that you give to being alone creates the emotion of feeling lonely. Because if any mother is listening who has young children who are constantly pulling at them, and a husband who's annoying them or a wife who's annoying them, when I would say, hey, what about being alone for a day? They would go, sign me up.
Ooh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and I remember when I was single, you know, being alone and getting up there in age and having all of these stories from my Jewish mother, from culture, about how it wasn't how it was supposed to be. And I remember doing a practice of, if I knew my perfect partner was coming, if I knew without a shadow of a doubt that within a year I was going to meet my perfect partner, how would I feel about being alone now? And my response was, oh my God, are you kidding me? I would just watch episodes upon episodes of Sex and the City, laying in bed, you know, wearing the ugliest sweatpants possible. And I wouldn't push myself to go out to some party that I didn't want to go to. And I wouldn't have this energy of scarcity. I would just be really happy and looking forward to that time while relishing this last little bit of single time. And that would put out this abundant energy for me that would actually attract that person to me. So really looking at those stories, you can see is so powerful, just beyond food, but with everything in your life, being willing to challenge the meaning that you give to things that are causing a negative emotion and therefore soon to be a negative behavior.
Right. Yeah. So let's talk about the spiritual side of things. Because one of the things that I love, which is kind of what you just said, is that the law of attraction aspect that you put in here. So there's like a part of your book where you recommend like visualizing how, spending time every day visualizing how you want to look, how you want to eat, the food choices that you make. Tell us about that a little. That was never heard anyone apply that to this topic. I thought it was
food.
Great.
Yeah, you know, people will talk about manifestation and you know, you have to, your imagination is life's preview of what's to come. That's a famous quote. And people say, you know, manifest your perfect partner and your perfect job and to visualize you going through that. And some people even talk about, you know, visualize yourself in your perfect body. But when I started, and I still to this day, wake up in the morning, and it doesn't have to be in meditation, although that's really strong. And absolutely, if you meditate in the morning, I would add this. But while I was putting on my makeup or brushing my teeth or in the shower or even on the toilet in the morning, I would just take a minute and visualize myself going through the day as it pertains to eating. So I would visualize eating my breakfast. I would visualize going to work and saying no to the cookies and shutting off my email and eating a slow lunch. And I would visualize myself cooking dinner in a way that felt peaceful and not rushed. And I would absolutely visualize myself saying no to a lot of the triggers, driving home and seeing, you know, an easy fast food restaurant, saying no, a friend saying, hey, you want to go out to dinner, saying no. And just really being in this empowered place around food. And then the last thing I would always visualize and still do is me sitting on the couch at night, drinking a cup of tea, feeling super, super proud of myself as to how I went through the day. And then the very last thing is visualizing me waking up the next morning, feeling leaner, flatter stomach, feeling really empowered. Maybe my digestive system is improved because of it. And just those few minutes of going through the day, it's almost like you are dress rehearsing how you want the day to go. And it's really, really powerful.
I love it. It makes so much sense to do that with food. I've never heard anybody, you know, put those together the way that you have. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about food. It's interesting because you don't talk that much about food in your book. I love it how that you have the food in the appendix, you know, the actual food. Because usually when you read a book about this kind of stuff, it's all about eat this and don't eat this and here's your food lists. And you have these sort of guidelines which make a lot of sense, like eat fresh foods, things that rot. Tell us a little bit about the food part of this process.
So one thing is that the reason why I put all of the food index in the back is because I didn't want someone to read the book and say, wow, this was so fantastic, I feel so empowered, live my best life, yada yada, and then go, but she didn't really talk about the food. And I really didn't want the book to be about food because it's not about the food. The whole point of the book is it's not friggin' about the food. But at the same time, I wanted to give people this guideline. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to put it at the end of the book. This way you focus on the real important thing for the duration of the book. And at the very end, you can take a look at exactly what I think are the foods to eat, superfoods, foods to avoid, snacks, sweet ideas, and that you really feel guided. But there is a chapter in the book that talks about finding your unique medicine and that there is a general guideline for everyone. And it's hard to say that when you're talking about nutrition, because I believe in biochemical individuality, which is just a fancy way of saying that different diets work for different people. And it's so obvious when you have a vegan who's thriving and you have someone on paleo and keto who are thriving and both of their blood work looks fantastic, you really can't argue one or another. Although many diehards in both communities will try to convince you that the other diet is poison, which we know is really about ego and not about the diet. Mm-hmm. But there is a general guideline that I can give to everyone, which is we should be eating foods that rot and spoil. And that the sooner they rot and spoil, the more energy they have for us, the more energy they have for us, the more vitality we will feel when we eat them. And that's not to say that you should avoid all foods in a box, even though ideally you should. I know that's not realistic. And I still eat my gluten-free crackers and my gluten-free pancake mix. And sometimes I'll have rice pasta and things that are more processed. But it's really to take a look at the percentage of foods that you eat that are fresh and alive and have energy for you, as opposed to the foods you eat that live in the pantry for years and are still, quote unquote, fresh and able to be eaten. So you've got that eating real food that's unprocessed, that rotten spoils. Everyone should be drinking their body weight, half of their body weight in ounces of water. So if you weigh 200 pounds, you should be drinking 100 ounces of water, 150, 75, and so on. And then there's the other rules about going to sleep at a certain time and your self-care and meditation and, you know, what creates a holistically healthy body.
Yeah. You had your five things in there. Is it sleep, meditate, cook? What's the other? What are the other two?
Exercise and silence.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Those are also good rules to live by.
Especially with the silence. I mean, I can feel myself on a low level of suffering for me right now because I have a young baby girl. I have a 9-month-old.
Oh, and congratulations.
Thank you. And I don't get a lot of silence. And no. I get the silence in the meditation, but I specifically made silence separate from meditation because of our social media craze and just how plugged in we are to so much information, and that it's really important that we have this time that we connect with nature and silence and that we can just feel that higher level of awakened presence. And I know that that's suffering from that's not in balance in my life right now. And there's a level of consequence to that, which is I feel more frustrated lately. I feel more tired. So it's not about being perfect. It's about allowing these emotions and behaviors to teach you where you need to do the work. And so currently I'm doing the work on how to create more silence for myself.
So how can people work with you? How can people get your book? So fantastic.
They can get the book on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, of course, IndieBound, and And if you are so inclined, please visit me at carlypollack.com. I have a private practice. I coach very few clients these days, but I still do coach, and I have top of the line, world's best coaches. I might be a little skewed, but I have a beautiful team in Austin, and I own a private practice here called Nutritional Wisdom. So you can also go to nutritionalwisdom.com if you'd like to hear more information about either coaching with myself or one-on-one coaching with one of my amazing coaches. And I hang out on Instagram all the time, so follow me at Carly Pollack.
Yeah, I noticed your website, which is funny. We didn't really get a chance to talk about how funny your book is. It's a riot, and your website was funny too. And I noticed you have a lot of really nice-looking classes on your website that I would encourage people who want to work with you to go check out.
We do. We have a four-week online class called End Emotional Eating. And I will just tell you that I felt very much like Britney Spears' first album in this book, because I had so many curse words in there, and my publisher made me take out so many curse words. They let me leave two in. And like Britney's first CD, and then she came out with the second one. She's like, I'm going to do what I want. I swear my second book is just going to be so foul-mouthed, because I felt so held back. And now when I read parts of the book, I'm like, that would have been funnier if there was an expletive there.
Yeah, but it's a funny book. It's funny. I'm from Boston, so I, appreciate the, the hard edge
yeah,
swearing
totally.
Kind of thing. We're sort of neighbors that way. But so thank you so much, Carly, for being on the show. Thank you for writing your book. It was kind of a game changer for me. Like, I'm going to go back and read it again. I might sleep with it under my pillow tonight.
That's so amazing. Thank you so much for saying that.
And thank you for being on the show. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And thank all of you guys. You can find me at lisacampion.com if you want to hang out. But thank you so much for joining us, where we are changing the world, healing the planet, one person at a time, right here on Empower Radio.